listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
How about that for an intro coming back with Rush? That's big right there. Soccer fans, don't forget to check out the Kings Court, 903 Hutchins in Edo on the corner of Walker and Hutchins. 13 televisions at Kings Court. Go down there, say hello to my good friend Jay. It's a great spot. They'll show all the EPL games, all the soccer matches from La Liga, the NFL Sunday Ticket, 24 taps, full bar, extensive selection of spirits, great Indian British cuisine, rooftop patio. It's got a real soccer pub feel. Go down there, say hello to Jay. It's Kings Court, 903 Hutchins. By the way, Atlanta United, wow. 27,000 season tickets sold. Three designated players. They just signed Venezuelan international Josef Martinez. He's only 23 years of age. Played in the Serie A with Torino. Hector Villalba, the Argentine winger, already there. Miguel Almirón, the Paraguayan midfielder. So three designated players, 27,000 season tickets. This is the new MLS franchise. They are coming in. They are spending money. They are lifting the bar. And it puts pressure on teams doing it in a different way fiscally. So Atlanta United, it's going to be exciting seeing them come into the league as well as Minnesota this year in 2017. All right, coming up later in this hour, we'll have interviews with Warren Barton of Fox, also Brian Chiaretta of America Soccer Now. But right now, I lead you into Matt Jordan. Matt Jordan, I caught up with him today to talk a little bit about the announcement with the affiliation with two local youth clubs and how there'll be uniformity.
Yeah, so the Dynamo recently came out with a big youth announcement tying you guys in with both Space City and Texas Rush. Just talk a little bit about what that means to the organization and to those two clubs.
Well, it's a very important initiative for us. You know, it's a great way to grow the game in the city. And we're really excited. And this is a very important step for us on a lot of different levels. And it's been a long process, but we think it's going to be a big step, for it to help us take that next step as an organization.
As you guys know, huge youth community down here. There's tons of money changing hands here. It's a big business. It's developing players. It's kids going on to college. For you, is there a danger for the Dynamo aligning themselves with two clubs? In other words, you're the pro club. You guys are at the top of the mountain. Is that dangerous?
No, we're not. We still have a lot of strong relationships with all clubs throughout the city. But this initiative and this partnership, we're working with two very organized and very good clubs that are very reputable. It's really exciting, to be honest with you, because on so many different levels, the club just grew a lot, and we think that it's going to be very good in our player development structure. It's going to be very good in streamlining our initiatives from a coaching standpoint, from a curriculum standpoint, and expanding our footprint throughout the city. The one thing I've learned, and I've lived in Houston now for a couple years, it's a big city, and that's an important element of this. And I think that this initiative is very similar to what you're seeing, FC Dallas, the initiatives they took a few years back. Kansas City's taking a similar initiative, Seattle as well, and so we're trying to get ahead of the curve right now and be aggressive, and we couldn't be more excited. It's been a long process to get to this point, but it's a big deal. It's a really big deal.
He's Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan joining us here. With the inclusion of those two clubs now, I guess you inherit about somewhere around 5,000 players. But what else is it? Because, look, your youth program has to be a vehicle promotion for the club, right? That's obviously one of the intentions. What are the other benefits you see potentially down the road? And tie me into somebody walking through that tunnel one day that comes out of one of these clubs.
Well, I think what it really does is it expands our footprint, as I spoke about. And it really gets into the grassroots level as well, and that's really important for us, because the one thing that's so important in player development is the younger you get them, the better. The younger you get them, the better, and you're able to mold those players. And I think what's really exciting for us with with our partners now is that, you know, the collaboration and having, you know, establishing, you know, a curriculum and streamlining, you know, the processes that we're putting in place also from a coaching development standpoint as well. And then what it really does is it completes our player development structure completely. You know, we've just announced our PDL initiative. So that's really facilitating the gap between the U18s and RGV. You know, we have, you know, and that's, it's a very logical progression. So what I'm so excited about is it's really completing our whole developmental structure. Now, look, it's gonna of course take time. There's a process involved with everything, but it's a very exciting initiative, and I think that soccer in this city should be very excited about this initiative, because ultimately it's about growing the game, you know, and that's our ultimate goal, is to get those players coming out that tunnel at our stadium, you know, and that's something that's very exciting. And, you know, and I can tell you as well, you know, it was great. We just brought the team down to RGV for a training camp, and it was awesome. It was awesome. I mean, it was very rewarding, and that's something we're hoping to make an annual thing and potentially tie into some exhibition games or a tournament as well. And it was very rewarding just to have both of our teams training side by side, and that interaction, you know, today you see in training, we have Emilio, we have Kai Green, we have Ruben Luna, who've been performing well, and Junior's been happy with them, and they're up here training today, you know, and they're going to participate tomorrow. You know, right now Charlie and Eric are dealing with a couple muscle issues, and so we sent them down, and they're going to, you know, get fit and then, you know, look to rejoin us here in the next week or two while we're away. So the sky's the limit, you know, and we're really excited.
Quickly, just give us a synopsis of the PDL. Obviously, if you don't sign a player that's come through the academy at 18, he goes on to play in college. It's a place for him to come back. You guys are able to assess and monitor him. Tell us what the benefits of the PDL team will be for the Dynamo in the whole player development scheme.
Well, first and foremost, it's competition in a real league. And that's the most important thing, is that you have to play real games in a real league where there's more pressure. And that's something that's very exciting. And then what it is it's a way for us, for our players that maybe, you know, every player develops at a different speed. You know, you developed at a different speed than me, and, you know, so on and so forth. So sometimes, you know, maybe an 18-year-old is ready for that next step, or 18 or 19-year-old is ready for that next step to go, you know, directly to RGV. But, you know, maybe there's a player that needs to cut his teeth in the college game a little bit. So what the PDL team does for us is it enables us during the summer months to keep our finger on the pulse and continue to aid in that developmental process. And I think that's going to be very important for us.
Matt, as always, thank you very much for your time.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right, that's Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. We'll take a break here. It's Best in Soccer Talk, self-proclaimed. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We continue it on. Let's shift our gears here a little bit now to talk a little U.S. national team, U.S. under 20 national team. Joining us now from American Soccer Now, it is the one and only Brian Ciaretta. Brian, thank you very much for coming on the program tonight.
Thank you very much for having me on, Glenn.
All right, so you've been following the U.S. in the January camp, saw the games. Some of the things that have jumped out from this camp and these two games to you as someone who's really followed it pretty intensely.
Oh, well, I think that even when the goals weren't there all the time, I thought that the mood of the team was pretty good. I thought the fact that they were, you know, all January camp games just generally are a little disjointed because everyone's in preseason. They're trying to get on the same page. I thought it was pretty good. I thought some players generally helped themselves. I thought a big talking point was the fact that some of the players who were frozen out under Jurgen Klinsmann seemed to perform the best. Darlington Nagbe, Benny Fielhaber, Sebastian Leggett, just to name a few. So I think that was kind of like an interesting storyline was the performance of those players. So I think that, you know, it was useful for Bruce. I think he learned a little bit about his playing time, his players, and what players might play a role in the cycle moving forward. He doesn't have a lot of time to work with. But I think he uncovered a couple things to players that were not underutilized that he could probably utilize a little bit more. So it was a valuable learning experience.
Who are those? Sebastian Legette, one of them?
Oh, absolutely. I think, he looked good on both sides of the ball. He was good at stripping the ball and making good defensive plays and quickly transitioning the ball into the attack. Darlington Nagbe, I thought, was another guy who, you know, had his differences with Klinsmann, particularly last year. And now it looks like he's in a good position. I thought Dax McCarty looked very strong as a guy who could probably play that Michael Bradley role, maybe perhaps do what Kyle Beckerman did. And it looks like Kyle's on his way out of the international stage. And Walker Zimmerman, too, because, look, if you look behind Jeff Cameron and John Brooks, and who knows about the health of Jeff Cameron, I heard he's not going to be healthy for at least another 2 weeks. Then it becomes unknown if he breaks back into Stokes' lineup. But after those two, there's never been really a good pecking order behind Brooks and Cameron. But as to who's the third, fourth center backs for the U.S. team, is it Omar? Is it Birnbaum? Or now is it Walker Zimmerman? But I think Walker Zimmerman made a huge case for himself moving forward.
Yeah, and I listened to the broadcast, and everybody was correct in saying it had an excellent game, and didn't put a foot wrong and all that. But I think it was Taylor Twellman who mentioned that. But he didn't really have to deal with much in behind him. And I think I agree with him 100%. Spun off him. The game was in front of him. It was easy for him as a center back. But that being said, it still is your debut. That comes with pressure. And he did make a lot of great decisions and distributed the ball efficiently. And it was a great day for him. And I think you're right. He does put himself into the picture. But to go one step further, isn't injury right now one of the biggest issues around this national team with Howard and Jeff Cameron ahead of these qualifiers?
Oh, sure. You know, there's, it's just because of that central defense tandem. It's like is central defense lack of a pecking order really makes it tough. And goalkeeping too. Fortunately, with goalkeeping, I mean, it's one of those positions where you age better with, you know, you tend to age nicely as a goalkeeper. And I don't think that's as big of a concern because Brad Guzan's been around. He's been through it. He's seen it all, done it all. So I think he's going to be fine when the qualifiers move around. But, you know, I think it's going to really come down to who starts off, let's say, among the MLS contingent of central center backs, you know, who looks good early in the season, who shows up well at the beginning of the March camp. And among the European or broad-based contingent, how is Omar doing at Pachuca? Bruce knows Omar very, very well from the Galaxy. But the question is whether or not he's going to translate over internationally in Bruce's system. That remains to be seen.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. It seems to me it's Cameron and Brooks. But if Cameron's injured and it's a fast track to get him back and he doesn't play for Stoke, yeah, why wouldn't Bruce Arena go with Omar Gonzalez? He knows him well. He probably knows the buttons to push with the guy.
I don't think that those two showed particularly well in November.
Of course they did.
And I think you have to really consider that. I mean, Brooks is coming off as talented as Brooks is, and Brooks might be the most talented American central defender I've ever seen. He has those kind of skills, but he also had the worst performance by an American central defender of recent memory last year.
You put Omar in there too, wouldn't you, Brian?
With Brooks?
No, Omar's performance.
Oh, he was very bad too.
Yeah,
I thought, I thought that if you went back and watched it again, which I did, so my readers didn't have to. Omar was actually running out like on that second goal was covering for Chandler being pushed all the way up the field. So,
right.
Omar was trying to do a lot in cover for Timmy Chandler, who was also very poor. So. Yeah, I mean, Bowen wasn't good, but Brooks was particularly noticeably off. I don't know why that was the case, and that's going to be something that, you know, hopefully Bruce hopes isn't a lingering issue that continues on to his tenure.
I guess my point is this. That was a nightmare day for every single player on the field for the United States, including the two center backs. And
Sure. Is
that one game enough to give a Steve Birnbaum, possibly him, but a Walker Zimmerman a start in a World Cup qualifier? I doubt it.
No, I mean, you know, that's a tough case. I mean, he's going to have to make a snap judgment. He doesn't have to make it now, but I think he's going to be looking at that area of the field immediately when camp opens in March, and he's going to look to see if things are off, if communication's off, if players aren't focused and they're not combining right and they're not reading the game right together as a unit. Because remember, Bruce has preached the back line has to play together as a unit, and he's going to be looking at that right away to see if something's not working and to see if it's a problem carrying over from last year. And if it is, he's got to end it right now, and sometimes the risk might be worth taking with the unknown if the known is not good enough.
Yeah, I don't know about the unknown in a World Cup qualifier. I don't know how much unknown there's going to be, and just on the other side of it, you know, Gonzalez has been there before. He's seen it. He's done it. I don't think there'll be too much unknown. I could see Sebastian Legette being in the starting lineup, though.
I could absolutely. I mean, it's going to be kind of a question as to what kind of formation he wants to roll with. Two strikers up top, or does he want to get five in the midfield? Four in the midfield, you start looking at, you want to have a 4-1-3-2, and then you have Michael in the one, and then the wings, you know, it looks like Pulisic will have one, and I think Kleshchen would have the middle, and then whoever's the other winger, I'm not necessarily sure. Maybe it's Nagbe, or maybe he moves in Legette on on one of the wings too. So, or does he move him in centrally in a five-man midfield? Those are kind of questions that, I mean, we don't really know the answer yet because Bruce hasn't had a chance to coach the national team at its full capacity yet on the FIFA International Day with his European-based players.
Yeah. It's interesting. We'll see how it all pans out. But I think it's going to be familiarity. It's going to be organization. It's going to be a cautious yet a timely, adventurous approach. And I think that's what Bruce Arena's been brought in there to do, and that's to get you to qualify. You're going to be following the under-20 men's national team. There are some names that people are familiar with in Major League Soccer. You know, Tyler Adams, New York Red Bulls, Eric Palmer Brown at Sporting Kansas City. Any other names on here that on this roster of Tab Ramos' under-20 national team that was just picked that we should be focused on as some talents that we might get introduced to?
Well, you mentioned Tyler Adams, but everything I've heard about him he's made some big improvements during the off season. You know, he showed up at the first two U20 camps this year, leading into qualifying, in unbelievable form, and he's also looked good for the Red Bulls in preseason too. So, at just 17, I know he'll turn 18 next week, but I'm expecting big things for him as potentially a breakout player in Major League Soccer. And obviously, Eric Palmer Brown's the captain. You mentioned him, but I think he really, you know. I'm looking forward to this team is going to be heavily reliant on Jeremy Ebobisi, who is the number 4 overall pick by the Portland Timbers. He's the team's leading scorer. He is, he's had a phenomenal goal scoring rate for the under 20s all cycle long, and they're going to go with a single striker formation most likely. And with that single striker formation, he's got to produce. This team is only going to go as far as, you know. If he's off, they can't really afford it very well. So he's going to be a player that I'm interested to see if that scoring rate is going to – now the games all of a sudden matter a lot more. So how is that goal scoring going to translate over? So he's one of the more important players, as is Sebastian Saucedo from Real Salt Lake. He's had a very good cycle as well. I think he's going to be in that attacking four formation, two wingers, a number 10, and then the one up top. So he's one of those – that core attacking players on this team, and he's done very well this cycle. So that's another player you really want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, as those players go, you know, that's how Jeremy, how do you say his last name?
Ebobisi
goes as well. I mean, if he's a lone striker, he's got to have some penetration and a good wide game in and around him. Ebobisi, how about his ability to hold the ball up? Have you seen him play enough?
Yeah, I mean, he puts in good assist numbers, too. I have watched him a number of occasions. I always spend a lot of time with the under-20s. It always is kind of is a good gateway and look into the national team years down the road. It gives you kind of a good sense of youth development in this country. So I always found it to be kind of a good area of study for any kind of journalist, and it's a team well worth following. But, yeah, Ebobisi seems to whether or not it translates over to the higher levels, the professional levels, it remains to be seen. But with this team, he's doing very well. He's doing everything Tab wants of him. And like I said, I like his hold-up play. I like his strength. So but he can't afford to have a dip in form. The offense is really going to run through him. So, I think Portland made a wide, got a good draft pick, and so did Jonathan Lewis, a New York City FC winger. So they have a bunch of wingers on this team and good central midfielders. The weaknesses really, I think, are goalkeeping and the fullbacks. There's a lot of questions, marks around that area of the field.
Interesting stuff here. I like this, and you're right. It is a good glimpse into the future here. Brian Ciaretta joining us. He's the lead writer with American Soccer. You go to the goalkeeping position. We do have a familiar name there, Jonathan Klinsmann. Is he the incumbent in goal there?
I think he's going to be the number one goalkeeper. I can't say I'm as impressed with him as I am previous number ones in this cycle on this team. In last cycle, you had Zach Steffen, who was phenomenal in the Under-20 World Cup. And behind him, even though he didn't play in the World Cup because he was number two, his club didn't release him, was Ethan Horvath, who's gotten national team appearances.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very strong Under-20 goalkeeping class. There's a little bit more room for concern. So I think, you have Tommy Redding and Justin Glad, who are both very heavily MLS experienced center backs. And then you have, I think Eric Plummerbound is going to be playing out of position in the defensive midfield alongside Tyler Adams. So up the gut, it looks like there's a lot of good, defensive, abilities in front of the goalkeeping position. But yeah, Jonathan Klinsmann from, Cal Berkeley is in goal.
We are talking about Todd Ramos naming his 20-player squad for the CONCACAF Under-20 Championship. It'll take place February 17th through March 5th. We're talking with Brian Ciaretta of American Soccer now. These are important tournaments. Obviously, the U.S. Needs to be competing in all these tournaments, get to the Under-20 World Cup again, which will take place in South Korea May 20th through June 11th. How much pressure is on Todd Ramos? Obviously, he's climbed in the coaching ranks here very quickly.
I think he's in the last year of his contract. So I think he's under pressure. I think in order for him to climb to like the full national team head coaching job, I really think he's going to need some professional experience with full grown players, not out of the youth ranks. So I think he's more or less lobbying, I think, for a good MLS job. And, he had a good cycle in 2015. So if he can have a good cycle in 2017, it really builds his resume nicely.
Brian, as always, listen, great stuff. Thank you very much. We'll stay in touch with you as you continue to cover the U.S. men's under-20 national team and the full U.S. national team. And as always, thank you. And be careful in that snow up there in New Jersey.
Thanks. Anytime, Glenn.
All right. That's Brian Ciaretta, American Soccer Now. He also writes for the New York Times. He is up on the U.S. national teams like nobody's business. Always great having him on the show.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Quick moment here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-4878, 713-322-HURT. It doesn't matter what your accident is, car, boat, motorcycle. You might work in the industrial field, construction, plant, refinery, 18-wheeler. DaspitLaw.com is the place to go. Daspit Law Firm is going to work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. Fight for your right for compensation with a Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. Well, how was that read, Warren? Did I pass?
You passed it. Perfect.
Daspit Law Firm brings us Warren Barton, a Fox analyst, former Premier League player with Newcastle United. He joins us now. Let's start it off, Warren, with some Spurs and Liverpool, and we always appreciate you coming on. Let's just talk first about Spurs. Everybody talked about their youth last year. Are they really the sole contender now to maybe chase down and try to hunt down Chelsea?
Possibly. I mean, Manchester City have a new lease of life in the last few weeks. A new player comes in, makes an immediate impact. They've got experience because they've won this trophy before not too long ago. So they've got experience. But I think when you look at Tottenham's pedigree, how it happened last season, they're still a very, very young team as well as a young coach. Europa is still in the equation for them. But by and large, I think they're the most consistent team. Defensively, they're strong. They've got a goal scorer with Harry Kane. So, yeah, I think they're the biggest threat to Chelsea if they can contain and put a run on. But we're all hoping for Chelsea to slip up, and it's not just one game. It could be multiple games, which is a long way to go, you know, with a short time to go with the season. But they're a very, very strong team, well-coached. I think they play really powerful attacking football, lots of energy, lots of quality, and defensively very strong. And also he's worked, you know, tactics. He started with four at the back, then he went three. So he's willing to be flexible as a coach, and I think that's a good thing.
That year that they had last year, obviously, and you mentioned the youth of the team, have they matured and hardened enough where, you know, you've seen a lot of visibility in that growth? In other words, Dele Alli obviously has got 11 goals now. He had 10 last year, but he seems like a more mature young man now.
Yeah, I don't think they're as petulant or they're as volatile with their emotions. I think they're very focused. Again, that comes from the coach. I think he's learnt from last season. Harry Kane, knowing him very, very well, and people speak very highly, the likes of Alan Shearer, about a level-headed person on and off the field. And I think that maturity has come from last season with that huge disappointment. But really, they were riding the wave last season and trying to play catch-up as they are now. And I think that's the pressure will come when they, if they do, when and if they ever get top of the table and people are catching them. So at the moment, I think they have learned. I think you've seen that maturity. I think they've been very controlled in their mannerisms, how they play, very focused, and that comes through experience.
Anybody on their team that especially sticks out to you? I mean, there's a lot of great choices. Obviously, Harry Kane is a goal scorer. We hear a lot about Dele Alli, about Eriksen, Dembele, Wanyama. Any of those that really stick out to you as being a vital piece that might not get the headlines?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Eriksen, for the young Ajax player, Daniel player. I think he's a talented boy. He's still only young, you know, early 20s. The way he plays, you can see a pass against teams that are maybe going to bunker in and make it difficult. Great delivery from service. And the goalkeeper, I think Lloris, he had that hiccup against Man City, but by and large, I think he's been a good leader, good example, good with his feet, but more importantly, he makes big saves. So them two are the really players that are maybe under the radar a little bit and just get on with their job. The two fullbacks for me are outstanding as well, when they're on their day, you know, whether it's Rose or Walker. Lots of energy, but I think Eriksen is a player, he's a difference maker, and I think he can see a pass, and coming through the Ajax system, Harry has done, a very intelligent soccer player as well.
Yeah, fun to watch as well. Spurs-Liverpool, that's the big one this weekend at Anfield. All right, we shift gears to Liverpool here. It's 5 weeks now. In that space of time, they go from dreaming of winning things to all of a sudden kind of being on the outside looking in and trying to plug leaking holes here. Many people are saying this could be a game that's very open and that could play to the favor of Liverpool. Would you agree about that?
Yeah, I would do. And I think, I'm not sure Tottenham will be so open as people expect, but I think they will have a lot of the ball, Liverpool. And I think that suits them when they're Coutinho getting the ball, Firmino getting on the ball. They can make things happen in the final third. They've showed that they can score goals, but their weakness has been their defense and goalkeeper throughout the season. I think it's a test in time for Klopp. I still think he's the best man for the job. I still like his style of football. I would like him to snarl a little bit less and really get out there and coach him now, because that's been quite amusing. It's been different. It's been energetic how he's interacted with the crowds. But now the honeymoon's over. Now let's see what he's got. And I've got no doubt he can do that. I've got no doubt in my mind as an ex-player and as a coach that he's got the capabilities to get this team back on track. I think he's took a lot of these players as far as they can go. I think it's now will be an interesting summer to go forward, because I think any decent coach tries to get the best out of his players, and I think he's done that. And I think now they've hit a wall, and that's the maximum you're going to get for maybe five or six of the players that are there. But I do think going forward he can rejuvenate the team. They need to strengthen, obviously, and just try and finish this season off as best they can, because it has been hugely disappointing in recent weeks. But again, going back to it, that's how relentless this league can be. You know, Pepford would come in and it'd be a breeze, and he's found it difficult. Until you're there and in amongst it, people don't know. They take it from, I hear about the Bundesliga and the Liga, and they're wonderful leagues. They're great leagues. But you have a winter break. It's a lot slower with their pace. The technical ability is quite outstanding. But the Premier League is just relentless. It just doesn't stop, whether it's the holiday period, whether it's training, whether it's media, whether it's players. It just nothing stops and knocks on now with the money, with the agents. and it just can drain you. And that's what it does. And it takes a lot of character. And from the outside, it maybe looks, oh, they just kick the ball long and it's physical. And I can get, until you're there, and Klopp's been there, and this is his second winter that he's had to deal with. And maybe he didn't learn from his first time, so now he's got to adjust as a coach. But I do see them bouncing back. But this is a tough, tough game, and they're always exciting games, these two.
Liverpool taking on Spurs this weekend. We're visiting with Warren Barton, a Fox analyst, a former Premier League player. I remember doing a preseason match with Steve Nichol that pitted Liverpool against Milan, and I remember one of our talking points in this game was, you know, what were they going to do? Would they purchase another defender? Karius was obviously brought in to be the goalkeeper. He then got injured, actually, in that game. Did they do enough at the back in the offseason, in your mind?
It's quite simply no. I think everybody's looking for, you can ask Arsenal, they're looking for a dominant centre-half. They're looking for a player that can be that leadership quality, that's comfortable on the ball, that can, you know, take the team forward, that can organise a back four. So I think there's an area. I still think midfield, a top quality international player. They've picked some good players. They've picked some, if you like, squad players. But I think they need two gems. They've got a gem in Coutinho and a number 10. Sturridge, I think it's the end of the line for him. I think he needs to go for his own career because I think it's not happening for him. The way Klopp wants to play, that high press, high energy, relentless tracking of the ball and working for the ball. But I just think they miss that dominant leader as a centre-back. But there's not too many of them around. You know, Klopp being Klopp, and I wish I was in his shoes, I would get two world-class players. I wouldn't worry about five or six players. I'd get two top-class players that are going to go for it. But they cost one a hell of a lot of money, and they don't become available in the January transfer window. But I'm sure he knows. He knows the German market well. There might be a player there that he's looking at, but I think they've gone past that now. I think they need to have two world-class players, whether that's in midfield and one at the back.
And I know, Warren, that we don't know all the ins and outs about what goes on behind and how much of an effort was put into acquiring players at the back for Liverpool. But do you still think that managers, to some degree, will kind of go, well, we can get by with this because, you know what, we're going to be a pressing team and we're going to have a lot of the ball. We're not going to be under as much pressure. So maybe I can get away with a couple of specific players. Maybe I can hide one. Do you think they still do that in this day and age?
I would hope not. I've had the opportunity to work with the U19 national coach, Brad Friedel, and, you know, just coming out of the Premier League and working with someone like Pochettino, who, you know, attention to detail is relentless. Again, that word keeps popping up about which players. No, I think you'd be naive enough to think you can get by with a player. At this level, it might happen in the Championship, it might happen in a lesser league, but you just can't get by with players. You have to have what you feel is the strongest, probably 18, that you can put out at any moment. Mourinho did it many, many years ago when he first went to Chelsea. He had 22 players. You know, there was two right-backs, two left-backs, two left-midfield, two goalkeepers at the same level. And that's what you need to do. You can't think that you can get by and scrimp. Well, you can take a chance maybe where you haven't got the money. I think, well, I hope he comes good. But you end up, you know, as it's shown, coming short, not just by a small margin, but quite a lot of a margin. You look at where Chelsea are and how they've, you know, they've had their luck in a way that they've not had to play Champions League. They've not had to have European football because of the disastrous season that they had last year and the system that they play. But I don't think a club like Liverpool can get by with just a player.
Warren, if we switch gears here to Chelsea, the singular signing of N'Golo Kanté from Leicester, how influential has that been for Chelsea?
I think it's been huge. You can see what's happened to Leicester. I had this conversation with Lexi Lalas about Leicester's plight at the moment with Ranieri. And Kanté's an excellent player. You know, I think his record, he's only lost four or five games since last season and this season, and that speaks for itself. And watching him play against Arsenal was quite outstanding. The work that he does, he anticipates so well. People say, oh, he covers a lot of ground, but he anticipates things so well. You don't really see him making too many crunching tackles. He intercepts a lot of passes. Quite an outstanding athlete. And he is an excellent player, and he's given that little bit of lift that they need. But don't get me wrong, they had a lot of good players before. You know, Costa's an outstanding player. You know, the goalkeeper's a top player as well. You know, midfield, they've had excellent. Hazard was player of the year before. So I think he'd come into a team that's ready to prove a point and a coach that was coming to prove a point. And I think he's an excellent player. I don't think he should make that much difference to Leicester's plight, the way they've fallen. But stats bear it up that they do miss him. Is he a player that would worry you maybe playing against? You say, yeah, he doesn't score many goals. He doesn't have too many shots. He doesn't see too many passes. But he does a lot of work for the team. And I think that's he's a team player. And obviously Chelsea have benefited with his energy. But I also think they've benefited with, again, no European football, and Costa and Hazard and players that to prove a point when Mourinho left, and a coach that's come in and got tactics spot on. So I think he's benefited from a lot of things as well.
Pretty incredible. He could end up, if Chelsea wins a title this year, in a span of two seasons, winning two titles. Pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and there's me, Glenn, saying that he's not a world-class player. So what does that make of my opinion? But, you know, he's not in the same bracket as a Gerrard or a Hazard, but he does a lot of good things for the team. Let's just leave it at that and see where I end up.
Leicester City, let's just move on to them. Have people figured them out? I know the N'Golo Kanté move obviously hurt. Mahrez hasn't been the same. Do you think teams have kind of figured them out a little bit here?
Ben, you know the game as good as anybody. I think the year before when they had Nigel Pearson there, they just about stayed up by the skin of their teeth. And then this following season, it all goes for them. You know, Vardy's scoring goals for fun. Mahrez is assist and scoring, and obviously Conte comes in and plays his part. And they did have any injuries, Wes Morgan and Hoof, players that have really been thrown on the shelf, and they rode the wave. So it's no surprise to me that coming a year later, after what they did, that, okay, people might have found out that they'd like to play on the counter-attack, they're nice and solid, that they're in a relegation battle, because they was the year before. So it's no big surprise that that has happened. I think people like Vardy have took their foot off the gas. I think they signed their big contract. I played with one of the best, or the best, I think, Shearer. Season in, season out, he got goal after goal. And his attitude and his personality never changed. He never got big time. He never got on private jets. He never did. Vardy's done that. And I know he's come from lower league. I did that. And all of a sudden, you come into this world and you get everything thrown at you. You lose focus. And I think that's what Vardy's done. And I think Mahrez as well has done that. So I don't put all the blame on Ranieri and how he's been. The players should take responsibility. And you're right, people do figure them out. If you say to them, break us down, they're not good enough to do it. And that's what's happened.
I think it's a great point, though, about all of a sudden the stardom, the celebrity and all that, and how you handle it, too. I think that's just a tremendous point. I haven't heard as many people talking about that. Back to Alan Shearer, who I loved watching him play. Give me a good Alan Shearer moment with you when you played with him.
On the field, I remember we was playing, it was Sir Bobby Robson's game, and we was playing Sheffield Wednesday, and we was winning 6-0 at this time. And can I just say, Sheffield Wednesday played very, very well for the first 35 minutes, but he'd already scored, I think he'd got to his fourth goal, and there was a young boy called Robinson that his family was there, he was making his debut, and we got a penalty, and I think it was about the 80th minute. And by this time, Alan had scored, I don't know, a million goals in whatever it was, but he's got his fourth goal, so he's getting the ball at the end of it regardless. The young boy said, Alan, can I take it? Can I have the opportunity? Alan went, no, and got five.
That's awesome.
How he was as a player. You know, he just put the ball in the back of the net and scored. It was about scoring goals. It was about winning. There was no nicety about how he was on the field, sympathy about players. It was about winning. And it was about getting the next goal, and it was about winning 6-0. It was about winning 7-0. And that's what made him. He was driven to be successful by scoring goals. On the other hand, when I first got into the England setup, and Alan had been a main player in the early 90s, I got called in from Wimbledon, which was a crazy gang at the time, and no one ever got called international from Wimbledon. Everybody knew what Wimbledon was like, but I was lucky enough to have been called into the squad. So I'd get down early for breakfast, sitting on these three large tables that are there with seat 15 people. I'm sitting in there by myself. I'm very keen. I'm early there for breakfast. Alan walks in, just won the Premier League, top player. Gets his cereal, goes and sits on another table with his back to me. I had to earn the right to sit with him. And that's how he was. And it wasn't arrogance. It wasn't rude. It was just, that was how you had to do that. In the end, playing with him for 5 years, going on holiday with family, going out for dinner with him. But you had to earn his respect, and that's the way he did it. And an outstanding player. I don't think his record, people say about Harry Kane breaking Alan's record, I don't think that'll ever be done. I've never seen anyone be so ruthless in front of goal and enjoy scoring goals and different types of goals as well.
That incident that you just described where he went to another table, sat with his back to you, was that kind of bar setting as well? I mean, That was contrived. He knew what he was doing, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He knew exactly what he was doing. Well, one, he didn't have a great personality either, so he couldn't really make conversation, but he was boring. But it was a fact of, okay, you've made the squad, but you've got to wait. You've got to bide your time, and that's what young players don't get anymore. They get it, and they go straight in, and if they want to sit or do whatever, it's going back to that learning your trade. And Alan made me. I've had other players do that when I was at Wimbledon. A great Mick Hartford, which was a great Premier League player, showed me how to train properly. And you just learn things. People like Stuart Pearce, and the list goes on and on and on. Peter Beardsley, all these top class players, John Barnes, Ian Rush. Just you learn off of people like that. And I think that's what's missing a little bit with the game at the moment. You know, that respect atmosphere for the game. Not just for what you do and the enjoyment that you do, but the respect for the game. And Alan was one of them that made you respect him, but also made you respect what you're playing for and who you were playing for.
Well, that's a tremendous way to end this interview. A very good interview. And thank you, as always, for all the great insight. And Warren, we always appreciate you coming on the show. So thank you very much.
And you're a gentleman. And as I always say, you're the best in the business, my friend.
Well, thank you.
Keep sending them checks to me.
We have you. We're going to put you on the payroll the amount of times you've been on the show. I think
hey,
it's
I
about time.
We, you. I keep saying how good you are. Not the show. I just you. So you not a we.
You know, maybe a case of some of the finest wine could be in order here soon.
I tell you what. Look after me when I come to your hometown. When I come there in the summer, look after me.
That's easy. I'll take you to some of the best restaurants you've been. We'll even give L.A. a run for its money.
Good man.
All right. Thank you, Warren. That's Warren Barton of Fox, and that's a great way to end the show here.